The book is The Pirates by George MacDonald Fraser. Chapter the Fifth. Silence. As the 12 apostles glides on over the dark green sea, bounded by distant banks of thin sea mist, the moon is down, the sky a dark arch overhead. Eastward, there is still no shimmer of dawn. Upstairs, the ship is deserted, save for the yawning lubber propped against the wheel, and the lookout in the crow's nest, who has finished Moll Flanders and is frowning over the crossword in the South Sea Wagoner. One across, what ships usually sail on, three letters. Rum? Bog? He peeps down to see what the 12 apostles is floating on at the moment. Water? Too many letters. He sighs. Another bloody anagram, probably. What kind of nut thinks these things up? Below, the crew, packed tight in their forecastle hammocks, have really got their heads down. Even the rats and weevils are flat out. Aft, in the first class, everyone is lapping it up, except Captain Yardley, who pores over a chart in his great cabin, scratching grizzled pate and muttering, "Belike and bedamned," as he plots his U-turn round the bottom of Africa. Vanity, beautifully made up even in slumber, sighs gently as the distant tinkle of eight bells is faintly heard. Of course she doesn't snore. It was Rook all the time, sprawled in his cot across the passage, his stentorian rumblings bulging the ship's timbers and causing his dentures to rattle in their glass. Avery, in his cabin, is kipping away like an advertisement for Dunlopillow, his eyes gently closed, hair neatly arranged, mouth perfectly shut and breathing through his nose. A smile plays about his mobile lips. He is dreaming of Vanity darning his socks in a rose-bowered summer house, you'll be glad to know. Over the way, Blood grunts and mutters in his sleep, one hand on the hilt of a dagger neath his pillow. If you've a conscience like his, you keep your hardware handy. And deep in the fetid oarlop, Sheba writhes restlessly on her straw, her fetters clanking dismally. Everybody bedded down, right? All serene? You know better. As the last bell sounded, ending the middle watch, a stalwart figure in neatly pressed white calico took over the wheel, and a massive, untidy heap crouched by the side rail, clawing his red hair out of his eyes, the better to scan the distant sea. Seeing nothing, he started striking matches, instinctively setting his beard on fire and having to put his head in a bucket of water to douse the blaze. But the brief conflagration had served its purpose. Far off in the sea mist, a pale light blinked, and as he coughed and spluttered and threw away clumps of burned hair, Firebeard was able to cackle triumphantly. "Here they be, Calico, good dogs, brave boys. Them dead on time with a curse, say I, and that. Unless," he added doubtfully, "it's some bloody fools we don't know on, playing about with lights unauthorized and wanton, eh?" Rage suffused his unwashed features. "I'll tear him, I'll kill him, I'll cast anchor in him," he was starting to rave, until a curt word from Rackham sent him lumbering below, where he blundered about among the hammocks, whispering, "We have lift off, rise and shine, rogues on deck, honest men, stay where you are. Get your cold feet on the warm floor, up and at 'em." In a trice, his accomplices among the crew had piled out, pulling on their socks, hunting for their combs and toothbrushes, adjusting their eye patches, and scampering silently up the companion, while the honest sailors turned over, drowsily muttering, "Shut that bloody door! Is that you up again, Agnes?" and the like, before resuming their unsuspecting slumbers. Up on deck, the little knot of rascals received Rackham's urgent whispered orders and scuttled away to seize the arms chest and guard the hatchways, the tardier spirits among them goofing off and tying knots in the rigging to make it look as though they were working. Firebeard blundered up at last to report, "All villains roused and ready, but the powers, d'ye see? Calico camarado arg-like." And Rackham dispatched him to the masthead to deal with the lookout. Firebeard panted busily upwards, taking several wrong turnings along yardarms and getting his legs stuck through futtock shrouds, lubber's holes, and possibly even clew-lines, before he arrived at the crow's nest to hear from within fevered mutters of, "Pot? Tea? Gin? It's another flaming misprint, that's what this is." Firebeard sandbagged the lookout smartly, snarling, "Take that, ye bleeding intellectual!" and hastened down again to join Calico Jack, who, grimly smiling, was at the rail watching Black Bilbo keep their rendezvous. Out of the mist they came just as the first glimmer of sun topped the eastern horizon, three fell shapes o' doom and dread, surging in on the hapless merchantman. First, the rakish corsair galley of Akbar the Damned, its great steel beak aglitter, the green banner of Islam aloft, its oars thrashing the water as the drivers flogged the naked slave rowers and rounded up those who had nipped aft for a quiet smoke, its deck crammed with swarthy, bearded rovers of Algiers and Tripoli, flashing their teeth, brandishing their scimitars, and getting their spiked helmets caught in the rigging. The galley was a fearsome sight to Christian eyes, and hardly less disturbing to Buddhists or even atheists, and not more fearsome than the dark, hawk-faced, hairy-chested figure of Akbar himself, lounging on his stern castle in gold lamé pyjama trousers, his forked beard a-quiver as he munched rahat lakum, preferred by nubile dancing girls, his fierce eyes glinting wildly as he practiced cutting their gauzy veils in two with his razor-edged Damascus blade. Secondly came that gaily decked galleon of evil repute, the Grenouille Frénétique, or Frantic Frog, flagship of Happy Dan Pugh, French filibuster, gallant, bon vivant and gourmet, who was given to dancing rigadoons and other foreign capers as his vessel sailed into action. Clouds of aftershave wafted about his ship, whose velvet sails were fringed with silk tassels in frightful taste. Its crew of continental sea scum lining the rails crying, "Remember Dien Bien Phu!" and "Vive le weekend!" as their graceful craft seemed to can-can over the billows with elan and espièglerie. In fact, Happy Dan Pugh wasn't French at all. His real name was Trevor O'Grady from St. Helens, but he had been hit on the head by a board duster while reading a pirate story during a French lesson, and his mind had become unhinged. From that moment, he suffered from the delusion that he was a Breton buccaneer. But since he spoke no French beyond Collins's primer, his crew had a confusing time of it. Third and last came Black Bilbo's ghastly sable bark, the laughing sandbag. He was last on account of he being barnacled, d'ye see, or in the rather coarse expression at the time, his bottom was foul. Consequently, Bilbo was in a rare passion, stalking the poop, inhaling snuff, and pistoling mutineers with murderous abandon. He couldn't bear being second to Happy Dan, who had pipped him for best-dressed cutthroat of the year. As his fellow rascals brought their ships in against the ill-fated 12 apostles, Calico Jack snapped to his small band of villains, "Down and take 'em, bullies!" And with glad cries of "Geronimo! Carnival!" and "After you!" they raced below to overpower anyone who happened to be around, crewmen who were still in the forecastle ringing for their coffee, or had gone to the bathroom, or were doing their early morning press-ups. Having disposed of these, the pirates stormed, howling, to the stern of the ship, recklessly disregarding the first-class passengers-only notices, and bursting into the cabins without knocking. Thus, Captain Yardley stared at his chart, in which a thrown knife was quivering beside his pencil-point, ere he could so much as cry out in despairing, "Belike!" Pirates were jumping all over him, binding and gagging him, untying his shoelaces, giving him a hot foot, and playing with his set square and compasses. His discomfiture was complete. Admiral Rook awoke to find an apple being stuck in his open mouth, and Firebeard's shaggy countenance leering down at him, yelling, "Breakfast in bed, me lord? Ha ha! Nay, then he'll make a rare boar's head wi' a curse. Haul him aloft! Give him the message! Do him the dirty wi' a warning by the powers! Arr!" And as the unfortunate admiral was secured, gasping and choking, Firebeard began to break up the furniture. What of our two bright boys? Blood, seasoned in alarms, was rolling out of bed, sword in hand, even as the first pirates came ramping in, yelling, "Surprise! Surprise!" He blinded one with hair powder, kicked a second in the stomach, crossed swords with a third, and then, having weighed up the odds, dropped his weapon and raised his hands, automatically reciting, "Oh, come quietly, officer, but devil a cheap you'll get out of me till I've talked to a lawyer." Thus tamely did the rascal chuck up the sponge. Not so across the passage, where a flashing-eyed Avery was holding crowds of desperadoes at bay with his whirling blade, jumping on tables, swinging from chandeliers, throwing chairs at their shins, knocking over candlesticks and swathing his attackers in torn-down curtains. It couldn't last, of course, it never does. They bore him down, cursing foully. Them, not him, he never cursed. And he struggled vainly in their brutal grasp, his hair becomingly rumpled, his shirt slightly torn, and the teeniest trickle of blood on his determined chin. But his eyes gleamed undaunted. By Jove, they'd better watch him! Down in the fetid orlop, an exultant Sheba was being unchained by the little Welsh pirate, who had also brought her a fresh wardrobe, so that she could be properly attired for the big confrontation scene on deck, which comes in a minute. She hurled aside her loathed fetters, gnashing with delight, and the little Welshman modestly looked away as she donned her scarlet silk breeches and shirt, buckled her diamante rapier at her hip, drew on her long Gucci boots, exclaimed at the state of her coiffure, clapped on her plumed picture hat, dabbed a touch of arpège behind her ear, and then spent 10 minutes selecting one long earring and applying her lipstick. Finally, with a curt "Tidy up!" to the little taffy, she strode lithely up the companion, pausing briefly at the full-length mirror in the gun crew's recreation room to adjust her hat fractionally and turn her voluptuous shape this way and that, wondering if she had lost weight during her captivity. A pound and a half? Maybe not. Still, she was brooding about this when she stepped into the cabin passage to meet a bawling Firebeard who had bagged Rook's coat and wig, thrown on any old how, and was kicking in doors just for laughs. He swung her up in his hairy arms, yelling, "She's all ours! Ho-ho! We masters of the ship, look-y! And Bilbo and t'others be layin' alongside! Shiver me timbers! Har-har! Tear 'em up, bully boys! Sick 'em pups!" "Put me down, you walking tank of pigswill!" hissed Sheba. "And if you've got spots of my new outfit, I'll carbonado you! And get that drunken rabble on deck!" She pointed imperiously at Firebeard's mob, who were looting and rampaging and writing graffiti on the walls and knocking the tops off bottles. They cowered before her flashing eyes, knuckling their foreheads and belching guiltily, and Sheba scorched them with a look before pirouetting neatly to the last unopened cabin door. She flung it wide, and Lady Vanity sat bolt upright in bed in a froth of lace, gold ringlets, and confusion, blue eyes wide, ruby lips parted, eyelashes fluttering like net curtains in a high wind. She was distraught, astonished, and envious all in one at the brilliant spectacle of Sheba swaggering in, a hateful smile on her proud lips, one fist poised on her shapely hip as she gloatingly pondered the petrified English rose. What an absolutely stunning color combination, thought Vanity. Lipstick not quite the right shade, though, but what else could one expect? Then she saw the monstrous Firebeard rolling and goggling in the doorway, and squealed with indignation. "How dare you come in here without permission? Leave at once, you inferior persons, underlings, peasants, savages!" "Savage, that's me!" howled Firebeard gleefully, drumming his chest with his fists. "I'll show you savage, me little honeyflower! Har-har!" And he rushed lustfully towards Vanity, great mottled hands outstretched. But Sheba, whose hips were not just for decoration, body-checked him elegantly as he galloped past, and he went flying in a tangle of shattered furniture and lay there roaring. Sheba stalked past him to a table where fruit and sweetmeats of Peru were temptingly piled, and crammed handfuls into her mouth, for prison rations had left her with that between-meals feeling, and she wanted to restore that pound and a half without delay. Vanity shrieked with outrage, "Put that down this instant! Oh, how dare you, you insolent black wench! Those are my personal goodies! Put them!" And she scrambled out of bed indignantly, only to be met by a well-aimed squashy fruit, and staggered back, tripping and falling into the embrace of Firebeard, who crowed with unholy joy, pinning her arms and pawing and nuzzling lasciviously. "Wriggle away, me plump little dove," he chortled. "Split me, but you'll coo softly enough presently." And it might easily have been X-certificate stuff then and there, always assuming that Firebeard, not overbright at best, and in a confused state after his fall, had been able to remember what to do next. Had not Black Sheba, gulping a final avocado and wiping the juice on Vanity's costly coverlet, kicked him sharply in the groin. "Drop it, thou hoarse and randy old badger! She's not for thee yet. Take her on deck." And she turned her attention to Vanity's dressing-table knick-knacks, while Firebeard, muttering, "Coo!" and holding himself painfully, hauled his struggling captive to her feet as she beat dainty fists on his matted chest. "Let me go! Ah, unhand me thy veil-clutches, reeking knave! Oh, the indignity that this should happen to me, Deb of the Year and daughter of an admiral! Eek! My jewels! Put them down, thief!" This last was addressed to Sheba, who was prodding with her rapier in Vanity's jewel box, sneering at the merchandise, but privately thinking that these society bitches did all right on Daddy's allowance. With one vicious sweep of her blade, she sent box and all in a glittering cascade across the room, and stalking menacingly over to Vanity, thrust her dusky face to within an inch of that pale peach-blossom complexion. "Your jewels, sister? Pah!" Sheba's voice was like oiled gravel. "You have no jewels, tender little lady, no perfumes or price, no fine garments, no dainty kickshaws and furbelows, none!" Her sword swept Vanity's scent flasks away in splinters, and slashed great rents in those hanging dresses which Sheba had decided were too short in the sleeve anyway. "And soon," the sepia nemesis chuckled evilly, "shalt have no body neither, and no soul." "Oh, I see you use Helena Rubinstein's pasteurized special," she added, "but I'll find a home for that, since you won't be needing it. Take it away!" For the first time, Vanity's intrepid spirit quailed. "Not the Helena Rubinstein?" she quavered. "You can't get it these days. Ah, of your pity, dark and sinister woman, not that! The line's been discontinued." "Don't I know it?" growled Sheba, scooping up the precious pots. "Haven't I scoured every boutique in Tortuga? Away with her, Firebeard!" as Vanity, wailing piteously, was dragged out, and Sheba was sizing up a suede number by Balmain, which might just do if it was let down a smidgen. The other passengers were likewise being rudely hustled aloft. Blood, an old hand at being apprehended and frog-marched, was murmuring, "Right, all right, fellows, I know the way," as they thrust him up the companion. Avery, tight-lipped and pinioned, came face to face with Rook, who was still in his nightshirt, leering pirates grasping his elbows. The admiral was in fine voice, though, damning them for pirate scum and promising to see them quartered and sun-dried. He cheesed it momentarily to inquire of Avery in a hoarse whisper, "Is it safe?" And Avery, inwardly cursing this indiscretion, nodded imperceptibly. Not imperceptibly enough, however, for a silky voice cut menacingly in, "Is what safe?" And there on the ladder just above them was the fearsome figure of Black Bilbo, who had come aboard and made straight for the Quality's cabins in the hope of finding some Sea Island Steenkirks or spray-on talc. He lounged wolfishly, hand on hilt, taking snuff delicately from the case proffered by Goliath the dwarf. "Now, gentles," quoth he softly, his dark eyes gliding from one to other, "what precious item, what thing or price is this that is safe, ha?" They remaining silent, Bilbo nodded, making play with a soiled lace kerchief, from which, to his annoyance, he realized he had forgotten to remove the laundry tag. "So, so," he hissed, clipping Goliath over the ear for luck. "We shall discover anon. Keep me this bellowing bullock below." He kicked Rook savagely and hailed a fighting cock on deck. The scene which met Avery's eyes may be old stuff to you if you saw The Black Swan, but it was new to him. A helpless merchantman in the talons of the hawks of the sea, chaps in hairy drawers and colored hankies staggering about, draped in loot, letting off pistols, getting beastly drunk, singing "Blow the man down," throwing bottles around and manhandling hapless prisoners. Firebeard had thrust Vanity sprawling on the deck in her scanty night rail to the accompaniment of wolf whistles and cries of "Hubba, hubba!" She scrambled up, trying to look haughty, which isn't easy when there's nothing between you and the goggle-eyed rabble except a wisp of brushed nylon and a few ribbons. "Shake it, Blondie!" they chorused, and Avery clenched his teeth in fury. Looking down from the quarter-deck was the stalwart figure of Calico Jack, the barbaric splendor of Akbar, and the slender finery of Happy Dan, who viewed the scene through his quizzing glasses and exclaimed froggishly, What is this what? I am aboard. I look about myself. Zut alors donc! What a doll's that! What talent! Ah, ma chérie, mon cœur est toujours à toi. How about it, eh?" He minced and bowed and fluttered his fingers at Vanity, while Akbar's eyes glowed with strange fires, and Rackham threw up a hand to silence the motley mob swarming beneath. Bearded white faces, coal-black Nubians, slant-eyed Chinese devils, swarthy Asiatics, squat and evil Malays, the usual lot on pirate ships in those days. Now among them glided Black Sheba, her glance dwelling darkly on the bound figure of Avery ere she took her place, lounging on a convenient capstan. "Camarados, brothers," cried Rackham, "we attain this fine ship, and released our dear comrade and fellow skipper Sheba from durance shameful and doom or hellish slavery." Cries of "Hear, hear!" applause, breaking of bottles, and an attempt by the little Welsh pirate to lead a chorus of "We'll keep a welcome in the valleys," and "We had taken also captives of rank and quality, a Lord Admiral no less," yells of hatred and blowing of raspberries, with Firebeard bawling, "Hang him up! Rip his guts out! He's an honest man! I hate him!" He rolled on the deck in a frenzy of rage, and the pirates cheered amain. Bilbo sauntered forward, sporting his shabby finery, his tight boots squeaking painfully. "All in good time, lambkin," quotha.
But by your leave, Brother Rackham, I have matter to import to the company. Cries of order, order, chair, chair. I learned that there is some precious thing aboard this vessel, and that this, he flicked a tiny poniard from his sleeve so that it quivered in the mast by Avery's ear, a shocking show-off, Bilbo was, fortunate fellow is privy to its whereabouts. Shall we inquire, huh? Aye, aye, roared the pirates. Go on, ask him. It can't do any harm. Well, bully, said Bilbo silkily, what is it, and where, eh? Discourse, friend, and discover. Don't be shy. This was the chance that Avery had been waiting for. Jumping on tables, pinking adversaries was all right in its way, but this is the kind of moment he is in the book for, really. His handsome head came up, his contemptuous glance swept from sinister Bilbo to frowning Rackham, to swarthy Akbar, to epicene Happy Dan, to the ring of hideous snarling ruffians, dwelt softly for an instant on Vanity, beauteously pale, got contemptuous again, and finally settled back on Bilbo with unfaltering disdain. Avery's lips curled, and his perfectly modulated voice might have been addressing a careless servant as he spoke with the calm good breeding of his kind. "Up yours," he said crisply. He had no idea what it meant, but he had heard it hurled at the Moors by an officer refusing to surrender one of the Tangier bastions, and had rather liked the sound of it, brief, punchy, and definite. The pirates went bananas at his defiance. They howled round him, hurling vile threats and making lurid suggestions for his interrogation. A heated debate broke out, the nub being to decide which torture would best satisfy the twin requirements of getting the information and providing an interesting spectacle. Happy Dan Pugh's proposal was finally carried, and a bucket of offal was hurled over the side to attract sharks, while Avery was lowered by one leg from the ship's rail until his head was just above the water, racing past the ship's side. This is a rotten position to be in, and it taxed even Avery's powers to keep up a dignified appearance. He preserved a poker-faced nonchalance, of course, but this was wasted, since no one could see it. The spray lashed through his hair, the salt water stung his eyes, and the rope around his ankle burned like fire. Up on deck, Vanity was swooning on the planks, and the callous villains holding the rope were saying grace. A yell of delight greeted the sight of two hideous dorsal fins cutting the water straight toward the ship's side, at which point they lowered Avery so that his head and shoulders were immersed. Our hero was now perturbed, not on his own account. This, he told himself, as his keen eyes pierced the green murk and detected the great dark shapes homing in on him, was what he was paid 3 shillings a day for. Nay, his concern was all for the fair and graceful figure which he had seen collapsing becomingly when they gave him the old heave-ho. What should become of her when the sharks had retired, burping gently to look for the sweet trolley? And all that remained of him was a sock and a buckled shoe. He must get out of this somehow for her sake. And Captain Avery's eyes narrowed under water, his lips parted in that grim fighting smile as he observed the horrible monsters rolling neatly to get under him, and came zooming up, their enormous jaws parting to reveal serried rows of glittering fangs. That gave him an idea. He would bite the brutes. It was the last thing they would expect. But even as he prepared to meet them, tooth to tooth, he felt himself suddenly whirled upwards into the fresh air, just as the first shark leaped and snapped its great jaws close enough to clip his hair. He banged painfully against the ship's side, and then he was hauled brutally over the rail and dropped on the deck, opening his eyes to find a pair of Gucci boots bestriding him, and hear Black Sheba's voice scorching the pirates who yet clamoured for his blood. Unthinking dolts! He'll never talk. I know his kind. And she flashed him a glance in which he seemed to read yearning admiration behind the feral glare of the amber eyes. but he'll sing like a canary if you threaten his friends," she added spitefully, and Avery groaned inwardly as the ruffians roared approval and seized on the swooning Vanity with cries of, "Now you'm talkin'! Heave the doxy over, ha ha! Here be plumptious tidbit for the sharks wi' a curse and that!" "Belay that!" snapped Sheba, and drawled cruelly, "We'll find a better use for her mealy milk-soppishness, damn her! No, that one!" And she flung out a hand towards Colonel Blood. You may have wondered what the colonel was doing during all this excitement. Looking inconspicuous, that's what, and wondering how he could pass himself off as one of the pirate gang. Even now he tried to look puzzled, glancing over his shoulder to see whom Sheba meant. But it was no go. They whipped the rope round his ankle, bundled him protesting onto the rail, and were about to launch him when he found his breath and wits together. "What's the hurry now?" he wondered. "Let's talk it over, boys. Don't do something you'll regret." Firebeard, gripping the colonel's shoulders, hesitated, growling and rolling his eyes. "What was it you were asking now?" inquired the colonel, and Avery, in sudden alarm, cried from the deck, "No, Blood, you cannot. You must not." "Ach, be reasonable," said the colonel, slightly exasperated. "Do you expect me to be a fish's dinner for the sake of your bloody crown?" Since the answer to that was yes, but it isn't the sort of thing that any self-respecting hero can say, Avery was silent, but the glare he shot at Blood would have curdled minestrone. His first instinct had been right. Why, the blighter was a blighter, after all, when any decent chap would have been spitting in their eyes with a dauntless smile. He was actually perspiring shiftily and demanding, "If I tell ye, will ye spare our lives?" The pirates growled, disappointed of their sport. There were cries of, "Yes! No! And toss for it! Best out of three!" And then Rackham came shouldering through the press to confront the desperate colonel. "Speak," said he bluntly, "and the sharks can go hungry." It wasn't total reassurance, exactly, but when you're perched on a ship's rail with Firebeard giving you the benefit of his halitosis and the jumbo-sized piranhas waiting underneath, it's worth stretching a point. "Under the bunk in his cabin," gasped Blood, nodding at Avery, and as the captain's furious gaze took on a disgust so icy that it almost froze the seawater in his hair, Blood added philosophically, "You see, Captain, where I come from, there are no heroes' graves, just holes in the ground for fools." You may imagine the indignant rage that boiled through Avery's manly thorax at this caddish cynicism, but it was nothing to the shame and anguish he felt when the Madagascar crown was exposed in all its brilliant effulgence on the deck, and the pirates, after a moment's stunned silence, stood around exclaiming, "Hot tamales!" and "Jackpot!" and "You won't pick up one of those at Woolies!" while their leaders regarded the unbelievable glittering prize with racing thoughts, for each realized that this was the big time, with a vengeance. To Akbar, grinding his molars and tugging his forked beard, it was the bankroll that should buy him his way to supremacy in Barbary, perhaps even to the throne of the Sublime Porte itself. To Bilbo, as he clenched his soiled kerchief in nervous fingers, it was that estate in Bucks, a seat in the Lords, and, oh, rapture, membership of the Army and Navy Club. To Rackham, slightly pale under his tan, it was a fortune invested in building societies with enough over to start a modest pub. To Happy Dan Pugh, it was a villa at Antibes, his own permanent private suite at the Negresco, and a custom-built coach with tortoiseshell panels rolling him along the Croisette, while starlets from the Comédie Française vied for his attention. To Black Sheba, it was her own private desert island plantation, where all the enemies and oppressors of her past should labor in misery and torment, while she lived it up in Balenciaga creations. This was her fondest dream, and with a start she realized that it now included Captain Avery, in powdered wig and buckled shoes, taking her in to dinner and exchanging glances of adoration with her from the other end of their sumptuous table. To Firebeard, the sixth of those desperate commanders, it conjured up visions of unlimited booze, wrecked taverns, senseless constables, and shattered fruit machines, and the wherewithal to impress that snooty barmaid at the Bucket of Blood in Tortuga, the blonde one with the big knockers. And then the fight started. With one accord, the pirates flung themselves on the marvelous trophy, clawing and biting to be at it, and if Rackham had not kept his head and hurled them back with boot and fist, aided by Bilbo's flashing rapier and Firebeard's enormous strength, things might have degenerated into anarchy. Back the captains drove them, a snarling, loot-crazed mob, and Rackham set the great gleaming crown on the capstan and demanded of the captives what it might be. Avery, of course, preserved a glacial silence, but Blood, at one growl from Firebeard, sang like a bird. "'Tis the crown for the new king of Madagascar. He was to deliver it." This was a nod to Avery. "And if ye've any sense, you'll offer it for a ransom to the British government, rather than try to flog it on the open market. I'd be willing to act as go-between myself for a consideration," he went on smoothly. "After all, I've got contacts and that sort of thing." But the pirate mob would have none of this. "Shares, shares," they roared. "Fair does among mates. Divvy out, we're all on the coupon." And Rackham raised his hands to still the clamour. "Brothers, hear me. We share, according to articles, but 'tis plain we cannot divide this great treasure among all at once. Now, there are six captains here, and six great crosses on this crown, so let each captain take one, and be responsible for selling it and sharing among his followers. Agreed?" The pirates whooped approval, and Avery watched in horror, writhing helpless in his bonds as his precious charge was laid on the deck and a huge Chinese, wielding a massive axe, chopped it with six mighty strokes into as many glittering pieces, while the gleeful buccaneers chanted, "One, two, three," at each blow. Then, as Firebeard turned his back, the Chinese held up each cross in turn, and according to age-old custom, Rackham cried out, "Who shall have this?" And Firebeard named the captains in any order that occurred to him, beginning with Sheba and ending with himself. So each captain received a cross, and their crews crowded round wolf-eyed to handle the pretty baubles and gloat on the prospect of their own shares. Avery watched the scene appalled. It occurred to him that the recapture and eventual safe delivery of the crown, which had never been far from his active mind, was now going to be rather complicated. However, he would come to that. In the meantime, could he gnaw through his bonds, or cut them on a bit of the broken bottles which the pirates were strewing carelessly all over the place, seize the half-fainting vanity in one arm and a sword in the other, fight his way aft, release the captured loyal seamen, and turn the tables on the villains? It seemed the obvious course. Yes. And then they could hang the treacherous Blood, and, no doubt, a dab of Airfix would put the crown to rights, and Admiral Rook would probably recommend him for a decoration, and Vanity would be wide-eyed and weak-kneed with gratitude, and the whole affair wouldn't do his promotion chances any damage, either. Yes, he was thinking along the right lines, but before he could put his plan into operation, the pirates, having gloated their fill and finished off all the drink, forestalled him by remembering that there were prisoners to play with cries of, "Let's sort out the helpless captives," "Oi, oi, let's fall to merry torturin' in that," and "Who's for a gangbang with the Admiral's daughter?" They advanced on the hapless trio. Naturally, they concentrated on Vanity, who shrank back in terror from the bearded, leering faces and lecherous paws, while Avery struggled like a madman in his bonds. But before their sweaty hands could tear away her shorty nightdress and confront the censor with all sorts of problems, Black Sheba had slipped lissomely between, one hand outflung to restrain them, the other on her rapier hilt. "Hold!" cried she, And before the command in those fiery amber eyes, the hardened ruffians paused, as Goliath the dwarf, with a chortle of, "Bags are first!" made a grab at Vanity's thigh. Sheba kicked his wooden leg from under him and sent him sprawling on the deck. "Calico, I claim disposal of this woman." At this there was hubbub and amaze in which you may well be sharing. What is this? Has womanly pity touched the agate heart of the ruthless corsair queen? Is she moved by finer feelings to shield Vanity from shame and ravishment? Perchance has some memory from her own dark past, as when she was the star attraction of Strip, Strip, Hooray! At the Port of Spain Rotary Stag Night, and the patrons rushed the stage at the torrid climax of her bubble dance before she could escape to the wings. Stirred her compassion for the defenseless English maid? Don't you believe it? Baser motives far were at work in Sheba's evil heart. She had remarked the distraught looks of anguish and concern that Avery had been shooting in Vanity's direction, and had thought, "Aha! So he's got the hots for Miss Cheltenham of 1670, has he? Right, we'll fix her wagon." And reasoning that the satisfaction of seeing her rival ravished by the crews of three pirate ships would be better foregone in the interests of getting the insipid pullet out of the way permanently, thus leaving Sheba a clear field with Avery, the sepia Medusa had hatched a diabolic plan. She confronted the frustrated pirates imperiously, while the tremulous Vanity clutched her flimsy nylon about her and wished she'd gone in for sensible long flannelette. "Back, blind, besotted curs!" snarled Sheba. "You can't all have her? Why, this pampered, puling ninny would die of the vapors with the first of you. But," and her eyes narrowed in a cruel smile, "all can share in the price if we sell her." She jerked Vanity brutally to her feet and held her in a steely grasp while she stroked a dark finger across the girl's soft cheek. "Think what the rich rajahs and fat degenerates will pay for such a plump white pigeon in the slave marts of Basra or Goa. You know how they go for bluebell girls. She'll fetch enough to buy each of you a real wench, not some flabby reserve for the upper fifth tennis team. Let Akbar take her and sell her on behalf of us all." Prolonged applause greeted this monstrous proposal, and Sheba turned with a triumphant sneer to run mocking fingers through the ringlets of the horror-stricken prisoner. "Try that on, your clavichord duchess," she hissed spitefully. "Golden Vanity, pah! We'll see how you enjoy your slavery." If aught had been required to cement Avery's adoration for the admiral's beauteous daughter, and frankly not much was, it would have been her response to Sheba's gloating taunt. Her face pale but proud, her bosom heaving with hauteur in a manner which caused some of the pirates to wonder whether selling her was such a bright idea after all, Lady Vanity countered with a swift 1-2. "Among slaves I shall still be a lady," she cried proudly. "Among ladies, you will always be a slave." Even the callous ruffians could not forbear to chant their approval of her dauntless spirit. "One in a row, boom!" they cried, while Sheba sprang clawing to avenge the insult. But Akbar, with a hellish laugh, had already swung Vanity's struggling form up on his shoulder and bore her swiftly to his galley, while Avery went ape, alternately cursing his captors and demanding that they sell him in Vanity's place. They pointed out reasonably enough that he was down-market stuff by comparison. "And anyways, we got a better use for you, Cully, and ye may lay to that," bawled Firebeard. "What say we keel all in, mates? It's ages since we had a good keel haulin'." But again Sheba barred the way. "Avast there, blubberguts!" She paced slowly to Avery, thoughtfully plucking her nether lip twixt shapely fingers. "This king's captain is too good a man to lose. 'Tis lad a rare metal has earned the right to join us as a free companion, if he so chooses. That or slow death." she added, with a look of smouldering ardor at Avery that would have melted treacle, at which the pirates nudged each other and stifled discreet coughs, glancing innocently at the mastheads and whistling airily. Happy Dan Pugh sniggered and grimaced froggishly. "Great round basins behind the mouth of Monsieur and Madame de Grange," exclaimed he, all roguish-like. "One addresses to oneself the question, what companionship does La Belle Noire have in mind for our prisoner, so stalwart and gallant, eh? Is it to make the promenade of bicyclette in search of cabbages, jewels, small pebbles, and stained-glass windows? Not on votre vie, if you ask me." And he minced and chuckled lewdly, while Rackham frowned neath knitted brows and glanced from Sheba to Avery. "Well, bully, what say ye? Wilt join us on the count, huh?" Avery was on the point of replying coldly that he would rather be shot from a cannon, but it occurred to him that there was no point in putting ideas into people's heads, so he maintained a contemptuous silence. Not so Blood, who clamored to join, inquiring eagerly about pension rights, sickness benefits, and overtime. They shushed him impatiently, crowding round Avery with menace in their looks, while Sheba gnawed her lip in anxiety and tensed herself to spit the first man who laid a finger on him. It was one of those explosive moments when eyeball rolls at eyeball and wills clash in ponderous confrontation, and no one has much idea what the hell is going to happen next because they've forgotten what the question was in the first place. Rackham, that canny leader of men, read the situation in one shrewd glance, and moved to defuse it. "Right," quoth he, "break it up. We'll give him a few hours to think it over. Not fair to rush the chap. Put 'em both in irons, and then let's get sail on this rust bucket before she grows barnacles. About it, ye dogs! Firebeard, man the larboard scuppers. Bilbo, have thy villains lay off the forecastle. Sheba, your mascara's running. Happy Dan, write out the verb être 6 times before lunch. And the rest of you, for heaven's sake, join in the chorus." These sailorly words acted on the fractious pirates like magic. In a trice they had hustled Avery and Blood below decks, swept up the broken glass, clued up everything in sight, and repaired to the merino lounge for before-lunch cocktails, while they discussed the exciting events of the day so far. Only Black Sheba brooded somberly on her high stool at the bar, and many there were who remarked how she was moodily squeezing that pink pimento stuff out of her martini olives, and wondered what this might portend. "Well, it's all happening, and no mistake. Our principals are right in it. Will Avery join the pirates? Don't be daft, of course he won't. But what then? Will Sheba's unholy passion for him provide the 24-hour all-round body protection that every young executive needs? Will the insurance company pay up on the Madagascar crown? Will Lady Vanity's purchaser be able to get her a work permit? It's all very worrying."